Sabe o que que também pode ser assustador, mas só no início? Ler as horas em inglês. Mas uma vez que você entende as regras e padrões, fica muito mais fácil. No e-book que a gente está disponibilizando essa semana, com o link aqui na descrição desse episódio, vamos explorar como expressar as diferentes horas do dia, seja em ponto, meia hora ou momentos diferentes. Também vamos abordar como indicar minutos específicos e usar expressões como AM e PM para indicar as horas da manhã, da tarde, noite. Além dos horários específicos, também vamos ensinar a estimar a hora do dia com muitas expressões para falar das horas com o inglês do dia a dia. Então, não marca a toca. Vai ali no link na descrição desse episódio e baixa de graça esse e-book para aprender a falar as horas em inglês. The content you are about to hear may contain details of violence, including graphic descriptions and depictions. We believe in sharing a variety of stories, some of which may explore dark and challenging subject matter. While we strive to handle such topics with sensitivity and respect, we understand that these narratives might not be suitable for all listeners. If you feel uncomfortable or triggered by discussions of violence, listener discretion is advised. The Enfield Monster. The Enfield Monster is a mysterious and enigmatic creature that was reported in Enfield, Illinois, in April 1973. This strange cryptic is often described as a large, ape-like or humanoid creature with reddish eyes and three legs. The incident sparked widespread interest and led to various theories and speculations about its origins and nature. The Enfield Monster sightings began on April 25th, 1973, when a local resident named Henry McDaniel claimed to have encountered the creature on his property. McDaniel reported seeing a bizarre, three-legged creature that stood about 4.5 feet tall and was covered in grayish-green hair. He described the creature as having a pair of pink eyes that emitted a strange, hypnotic glow. According to McDaniel, the monster had a high-pitched screech and emitted a foul odor, which caused him to feel nauseated. McDaniel's encounter with the Enfield Monster was not an isolated incident. Other residents of the area also reported similar sightings of the creature. These accounts led to increased media attention and a general sense of fear and curiosity in the community. Naturally, the Enfield Monster prompted numerous speculations about its identity and origins. Some believed it could be a misidentified animal, such as a bear or a large raccoon. Others thought it might be a hoax or a prank perpetrated by local residents, though these explanations didn't account for McDaniel's initial report. Paranormal enthusiasts suggested that it could be an extraterrestrial being or a cryptid with unique abilities. The Enfield Monster sightings gradually decreased, and it faded from public attention. No concrete evidence was ever found to support the existence of the creature, and many dismissed the reports as a case of mass hysteria or misidentification. To this day, the Enfield Monster remains one of the many unexplained mysteries in the realm of cryptozoology. While the incidents attracted media attention in the 1970s, the lack of substantial evidence and the passage of time have relegated it to the realm of local legend and folklore. Whether the infield monster was a genuine cryptid or a product of overactive imaginations and a vivid local legend, it continues to capture the imagination of those interested in the unexplained and mysterious. The Axe Murder House. The Axe Murder House, also known as the Villisca Axe Murder House, is a historic and infamous location in Villisca, Iowa. It gained notoriety due to a gruesome and unsolved murder that occurred there in 1912. The house has since become a popular destination for ghost hunters, paranormal enthusiasts, and tourists interested in the macabre. The tragic events at the Villisca Axe Murder House took place on the night of June 9, 1912. An unknown assailant or assailants broke into the home of the Moore family, consisting of Josiah and Sarah Moore and their four children, as well as two visiting sisters, Ina and Lena Stillinger. Using an axe found in the house, the intruder brutally murdered all eight individuals in their sleep. The murder scene was horrific, with the victims suffering numerous blows to their heads, which made it a gruesome and chilling crime. The murders shocked the small town of Villisca and the nation as a whole. The case generated significant interest from the media and law enforcement. But despite their efforts, the murderer was never identified or brought to justice. Numerous theories and suspects were considered over the years, but the case remained unsolved. In 1994, the Villisca Axe Murder House was restored and opened to the public as a museum. Visitors can tour the house and learn about the history of the murders, the investigation, and the enduring mystery surrounding the case. Many people believe the house is haunted and that the spirits of the murder victims linger there. Reports of strange occurrences such as unexplained sounds, voices, and apparitions have only added to the house's reputation as a haunted location. The Villisca Axe Murder House has been the subject of numerous television shows and documentaries on the paranormal. The case remains unsolved, and the Villisca Axe Murder House continues to intrigue and fascinate those interested in true crime and the supernatural. It stands as a testament to the enduring mystery of the unsolved Villisca Axe murders and the dark history of the location. The Lizzie Borden case. Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. This little poem is about the Lizzie Borden case, one of the most infamous and enduring murder mysteries in American history. It revolves around the brutal murders of Andrew and Abby Borden, which occurred on August 4, 1892 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Lizzie Borden, the daughter of Andrew Borden, was accused of the murders and later stood trial, attracting widespread media attention and public fascination. The victims of the Borden murders were Andrew Borden, a wealthy businessman, and his second wife, Abby. Both were found hacked to death in their family home with a hatchet. Lizzie Borden, Andrew's 32-year-old daughter from his first marriage, quickly became the prime suspect due to her presence in the house at the time of the murders. The case against Lizzie Borden was largely circumstantial, but there were several pieces of evidence and circumstances that raised suspicion. Lizzie's alibi. Lizzie claimed to have been in the house at the time of the murders, stating that she was in the barn when her father was killed and in the sitting room when her stepmother was killed. She said she had no knowledge of the murders. Lack of other suspects. There were no signs of forced entry and no one else was present at the time of the murders, making Lizzie the most likely suspect in the eyes of investigators. Motive. Lizzie and her sister Emma stood to inherit their father's substantial estate. Some speculated that financial gain may have been the motive for the murders. The trial of Lizzie Borden began in June 1893 and garnered significant media attention. Lizzie was represented by a strong legal team, and her defense argued that the evidence against her was largely circumstantial and insufficient to prove her guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Lizzie herself did not take the stand during the trial. The jury ultimately acquitted Lizzie Borden of the charges in June 1893, and she was found not guilty of the murders. Despite her acquittal, many of the public believed that she was guilty, and her name became forever associated with the murders. Lizzie Borden and her sister Emma continued to live in the same house in Fall River but faced social ostracism. Some still believe that Lizzie was indeed the perpetrator, while others suggest alternative suspects. The case has inspired numerous books, movies, and works of literature, further cementing its place in American true crime history. The Human Dolls Collector. Anatoly Moskvin seemed like a smart guy, according to the Daily Beast. The college professor and Russian journalist mastered 13 languages. But he also had a peculiar hobby. He was a self-dubbed necropolist, or an expert on cemeteries. Moskvin was so fascinated by cemeteries, in fact, that he visited 752 of them in and around his hometown. He wrote lengthy reports with titles like Great Walks Around Cemeteries and What the Dead Said that were published in a weekly newspaper called Necrologies. Apparently, this curiosity was tied directly to an incident from his childhood, which he divulged in his last contribution to the paper on October 26, 2011. When Moskvin was 13, a group of men stopped him and forced him to join a funeral and to kiss the dead 11-year-old girl on the lips. "I kissed her once, then again," he wrote. The girl's mother then placed a wedding ring on his and her daughter's fingers. Moskvin wrote that his strange marriage was useful and spurred an irrevocable lifelong fascination with the dead. Moskvin began writing about the dead and talking detailed notes of each cemetery he visited. He even spent a night in the coffin of a dead person ahead of their funeral. It was when locals found the graves of their loved ones desecrated and dug up in 2009 that Moskvin's hobbies became untenable. The Russian government had no leads, but they were sure extremists were to blame. Until 2011, nobody had any inkling who the culprit in this bizarre horror story was. But when the police heard that Muslim graves were being desecrated in Nizhny Novgorod following a terrorist attack at Moscow's Domodedovo airport, they finally caught a break. They found Moskvin painting over the pictures of dead Muslims. While he wasn't desecrating the bodies themselves, authorities arrested him and searched his apartment. That's when they realized Dade stumbled upon a real-life horror story. Countless life-size dolls littered the apartment, which Moskvin shared with his parents. The dolls' hands were covered in fabric and makeup covered their faces. It quickly became apparent that these were not inanimate objects. These were the mummified corpses of human girls. When police tried to move them, music began to blare. Moskvin had embedded music boxes into the chest cavities of these dolls. A dried human heart and a piece of a gravestone were found in the home as well. The corpses were stuffed with rags, their eye sockets filled with buttons or toy eyes. Moskvin said he would watch cartoons with them and that he dug them up because he was lonely. He said his biggest dream was to have children and that he'd been waiting for science to figure out how to revive the dead. His parents had no idea. They assumed their son had a hobby of building large playthings. In court, their son confessed to 44 counts of abusing graves and dead bodies. Despite psychiatrists claiming that Moskvin's condition is steadily improving, prosecutors managed to keep him safely removed from society. The Myrtles Plantation. Of the numerous spirits haunting this plantation built in 1796 in San Francisville, Louisiana, the most known entity is Chloe, according to the official website. It's said that plantation owner Clark Woodruff carried on an affair with an enslaved person, Chloe, which he ended up abruptly. She began to eavesdrop on his conversation and he caught her. As punishment, he cut her ear off. She then poisoned the rest of his family with a birthday cake, leaving him alone. The other enslaved people knew what she had done and hanged her. She supposedly still remains on the property with a photograph from 1992 where her spirit is reportedly visible. A past life. It was the anniversary of 9/11, and a couple sat down to watch a special about the event. While they watched, their three-year-old daughter was coloring. As the television showed one of the planes hitting the tower, the little girl looked at the screen and, in an emotionless voice, said simply, "I died there." The parents sit in stunned silence as the little girl simply returns to her coloring. It has been said that children are especially receptive to the strange energies around them. That bond could be even more powerful when the child is connected to an event from another life. After making her announcement about her previous death, every time anything about 9/11 came on, she would tell her parents, "Turn these off. I don't want to see this." Dead Woman's Crossing. This one's a regular murder mystery turned ghost story, according to Atlas Obscura. In the early 1900s in Weatherford, Oklahoma, Katie DeWitt James left her home with her baby after she filed for divorce from her husband. She planned to move in with her cousin, but her family never heard from her. After an investigation, it turned out that she moved in with local prostitute Franny Norton. She was last seen leaving the house with Franny and her child in a carriage. Franny returned with a child who was covered in blood, but without Katie. Her body was found later, along a nearby creek, with her head cut off. It was rumored that her ex-husband had her killed with Franny's help, but Franny claimed she wasn't involved in Katie's death. But on the day she was supposed to be questioned by the police, she poisoned herself. Katie's is still around, though. She allegedly appears as a blue light floating around town, and people have reported hearing a woman looking for her baby and the rolling sound of wheels. Okay, what was your favorite, or which story do you consider the most frightening one? Se vocês quiserem acompanhar a leitura desses áudios, é só chegar lá em www.englishinbrasil.com.br/blog. Tá tudo lá direitinho para que vocês acompanhem, mas tem aquela forçada que eu sempre digo para vocês. Tenta entender ao máximo sem ler. Quando não der mais, aí sim, vão para o blog, o link está ali na descrição do episódio também, para vocês acessarem. Certo? Teacher Fábio Emerim vai ficando por aqui. Thank you so much for being here with me today. Have a great Friday 13th and see you next time!